Welcome to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. This podcast is for self-employed business owners just like you, who really want to grow their business and become successful and profitable, but without all the stress and hassle. I want to share my 30 years of business experience to show you how simple it can be to earn more money and how you can get organized without needing a business degree or any other qualifications. I'll be talking about the easy steps that you can put in place right now to start earning more money today and to help you get the business that you deserve and dream of. Without further ado, let's get started. This week's podcast is sponsored by Pocket PA, helping self-employed business owners to get organized, understand their finances, and do their accounts all in one place using a powerful online tool. If you're serious about making a profit and having a successful business, then using a simple digital web app like Pocket PA is the best way to grow and scale your business. Visit pocketpa.com for more details and start managing your money like a pro today. Hello, how are you? Welcome to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. I hope you're looking forward to this week's show because today I'm talking with Holly Matthews, and she's a former TV actress, a singer, a self-development coach, a best-selling author, founder of the Happy Me Project. She's also a podcaster, a guest expert on both radio and TV, and an NLP practitioner, as well as being a widowed mum and now an all-round amazing person to two beautiful children. So I'm really excited to have her as my guest today and share her story, which is incredibly inspiring. Holly Matthews, just wow. I can't wait to dive into all of this. How are you? Welcome.
Oh my gosh, I'm great. Thank you so much for having me. And it always, every time somebody reads out the long, long list of things, I'm like, oh, I feel like we said previous to this, didn't we? I feel like I've lived a long, I'm an old woman in a 38-year-old's body. I've lived a long life. So there's lots of things. And even when I hear them, I'm like, oh, that sounds great. You know, like it's somebody else's life even. But thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Pleasure. I almost don't know where to start if there is even a beginning. It sounds like you've packed three or four lives into one lifetime already, and you can't even be halfway through your life just looking at you. You look far too young to have done all of that. And blimey, you've even done a TED talk. I didn't even mention that.
Oh my god, the TED talk was very exciting. And I was a TED nerd. Like I still am a TED geek nerd. Like I just love TED talks, and I wanted to do it for a very long time. So I was very lucky to be able to do that. But definitely put it out in the universe. Like, was definitely talking about the fact I wanted to do it for a long time. But it was a lovely tick in the box. And the question you asked me, I talked over. So what was the question? Was the question, let's go back to the beginning.
That's okay. I just said, could you just start at the beginning if there was a beginning? What has been your journey to this point? Just share with the listeners about what's brought you to this decade.
Well, yeah, I mean, I started work when I was 11 years old. So in fairness, when we say I've lived lots of life, I mean, I did start earlier than the average man and woman out there. I was 11 when I went into the world TV, and I became an actress. I wanted to be an actress from being like, I don't know, 6 or 7 like years old. And my dad was a welder. My mum worked in a bank. It was nothing. I did not come from some kind of wealthy stage and screen family. We lived in a normal working class area, Newcastle upon Tyne. The fact I wanted to be an actor was probably puzzling to them, but I'm very lucky. I've got a family who are very supportive. And actually, looking back now, it makes perfect sense as an ADHD neurodivergent person why I would have went into acting if we were to pick that apart. But I wrote a letter. Essentially, there was a TV show called Biker Grove, which some of your listeners will remember fondly. It's a very it's one of those shows that even now, it's probably once a week somebody will mention it to me because it was just so well liked by people who watched it, and they have such nice memories of it. And that was in Newcastle upon Tyne, where I'm from. That was on TV, and it was set there. And so I heard about this show, and I decided I wanted to be in this show. So I did what I still do, which is just ask the question if I can do it, or I put myself forward for it. I still do business in exactly the same way as that child did. And so I wrote a letter. My dad had got the address off the casting director. I wrote a letter, and I actually was given this letter on my 30th birthday. My mum and dad found it on the computer, which I was shocked we had a computer, to be honest, at the time. And this letter, they put it on a canvas board for me, and it really was the start of my career. And it's, I've written, my name is Holly, I am an actress. So I wrote, my name is Holly, I am an actress. And I think I had written, I'm 12 years old, which was a lie. But you know, when you're that age and you want to age up, like you now we're all about aging down. We're like trying to like knock off a year. At that age, you don't age up. I'm like, I'm 12. I definitely wasn't. I didn't start the show till I was 11. So I wrote this out. So this letter said, I'm Holly, I'm an actress. So I declared it straight off the bat. Like I had no, there was like, I always affirmed who I wanted to be. I'm Holly, I'm an actress. And I had written, I have brown hair, green eyes. Brown hair I had done in the color brown, green eyes I had done in the color green. And it said, I do acting classes on a Saturday, which I had started doing, and I am not shy one bit. I'd put that in, just stuck that in. And then at the very bottom, I'd put, P.S. please write back soon. I was dead keen for them to write back. And the whole thing is done in Comic Sans, which those that are the font Comic Sans and those that are designers, they say, don't they, that a designer loses its wings when somebody uses Comic Sans. So it was, but at the time that was dead fancy. I thought I was being like, oh, I've went cursive writing. So I've sent this letter off and they got me in for an audition, because actually they used to get in normal kids. There wasn't, in Newcastle at the time, there was no stage schools or anything like that. We didn't have all that. We were up north. And so they got me in and it auditioned me. I auditioned 6 times, didn't get the part, but not at any point did I think, oh my God, that's it, give up. Because you don't at that age, right? I thought, then it's doable. Then I could just need to do it again. And this time I get it. And 6 months later, they just wrote a part in for me. And so I did that show for 7 years. I grew up on television and I didn't think I would do anything else. I left that show. I signed to Sony. I was then, doing Top of the Pops and MTV and doing singing. Although I never really loved that, I have to say that wasn't something I loved. I just could sing and it was an opportunity. I then had an interesting experience, but didn't love it. And then I went to drama school because I thought I'd be like a proper actor. I left and I continued to do what I wanted to do. I mean, I have to say, I didn't finish drama school. I left because I was sneaking off to auditions and just wanted to be back in the industry. So I was like doing this really prestigious drama school that was hard to get into. And I was there, but I was like 1 foot out the door trying to do other things. And I got a part on a show called Waterloo Road, playing a character who then got expelled, playing a naughty character. But I was doing what I wanted to do. I was a jobbing actress and loving what I was doing. Between that, I would do radio presenting or modeling and never had a proper job as such. I kind of had, you know, I'd work in a bar here and there, but I was always making things up to fit in between acting. And largely this was the very infancy of social media by this stage. So we didn't have access to the stuff we have now. I was, you know, making flyers and sticking them through people's doors and saying I could do this, and a little bit of the internet, but very, very early stages. But I learned early on that it was important to have something to do between acting and to take that control back a little bit. And a lot of actors don't learn that. What took me into where I am today is a few things. One, I had always done self-development for myself. I was a weird kid. Fully was weird and was then the weird kid who was on telly and that had a lot of attention, and my self-esteem wasn't great because for 6 months of the year filming I was having somebody correct my face with the makeup artist doing my makeup. And psychologically, I guess if you look back at that, you know, you're on a screen when nobody was on TV. It's not like now my kids couldn't be less impressed that I'm on TV. They're like, well, how many followers do you have on TikTok? Not enough. So continue. They're not bothered. But at the time, it was a big deal being on TV and I was in normal school and it was hard. And, you know, then I would see myself on screen and I didn't feel good. And I've always been a very optimistic person, but I didn't feel good. And I started to try and find ways to feel good, which took me into this world of self-development, which literally took me to the library because, we didn't have the internet. So I would go to the library and I was reading books from, I guess, Paul McKenna, hypnosis stuff. And I'd heard the word meditation. So I was listening to music and doing what I thought would be meditation. I was doing affirmations, but I didn't know there was a word for it. I would write my negative thoughts out, and I just doing things very much touchy-feely. I was working my way through it myself. And throughout my acting journey, the highs and lows of being an actor, I began to, I was still doing that stuff in the background for myself. I talked about it a lot to other people, but I didn't consider that it would be something I would go into as a job, because actors and performers tend to be very one-track minded about that, very driven. And I just didn't think it would be something I wanted. Then I became a mom, and then my husband, Ross, was diagnosed with brain cancer. When that happened, everything shifted on its head for me. And I had one of those moments in life where your worldview changes. Like something, it was really pivotal for me and bizarre even in the moment, because I had been from such a young age, like fully focused, like so laser focused on being an actor, picking up that Oscar. That was all that was in my mind. I'm going to be an Oscar award winning actress. I already am. It's there. It's just waiting for me. That was my whole ethos. When Ross was diagnosed, I remember coming home. I remember being on my own for the first time and recognizing that this was happening. And I had just finished doing BBC Casualty. I had booked a film that I was supposed to be doing. So I knew my agent needed me to phone her and kind of update her with what was happening, because she'd had bits and pieces. And I just thought to myself, I couldn't care any less about that. I don't care. And I don't understand why I ever did care. It was such a shift in my psyche, and it hasn't gone back. Like it has gone back in some respect of like wanting to play around with acting and things like that, but it hasn't gone back in anywhere near where it was. When Ross was, when he was going for treatment for the brain cancer and going through all of that stuff, I just started to talk about self-development. I was talking to people around me. I was talking about what I was doing. I was trying to give people around me things to do because they were finding it hard. And it naturally, very organically, became this thing that I started to do and to make my work. I've always been entrepreneurial. So that thing, that pull is there. So even when I'm kind of like, well, I'm going to be at home with my husband and the kids, I still want to do. And so I was like, well, maybe I can do this online and I'll do this here. And it became this really organic thing. When Ross died, which was about three and a half years after that, again, it grew again into what it is today, which is the Happy Me Project. And that happened after his death. There was a huge amount of press around Ross and his death, and partly because of my acting and the kind of, you know, tabloids will pick that up, and his dad was a footballer, so there was a lot of like, and when we were a young family, you know, it's what everybody fears. We were living it, and because of that, it brought a lot more people to my work and my social media, and people were seeing me talk openly and candy about what I was going through and what I was doing, and they didn't understand necessarily how, or they wanted to know how, whether they were experiencing the same thing or they were experiencing something, you know, just life's hard because it's hard being an adult. And I couldn't do the kind of coaching I had been doing before because I was grieving. So I put together this online course, the Happy Me Project, 21 days of audios, videos, literally me with my phone, the most sexy version of a course being put together, no fancy microphones or lighting. It was me at the bottom of my stairs with my phone recording an audio. I thought, I'll just do 21 days of the stuff I do to not lose my mind every day. Put it together, pushed it out into the world, no pomp or ceremony. And I started to see people gravitating towards it. And from that time, it has grown from that into in-person events. It became, now it's a membership, it's a life coaching membership, it's a best-selling book, it's bigger events now. I've just started doing, I'm doing my third Restival event, which is a whole day of self-development in London very soon. And it's become, it's taken a life of its own, but going from being an actor into this world was probably a bigger jump for everybody else than it was for me, because I'd always done it. It just was now that I connected some of the dots of things I'd done within acting and kind of made it this new thing for me, this new stage in my life. So it has been a journey, all of this stuff. And obviously that's weirdly, because it was a long chat, weirdly bullet pointing all of the kind of the highs and lows in amongst all of that. But I'm very lucky and I really love what I do.
I think that's just incredible. So inspiring. I think that's the longest intro we've had on, like, what do you do on your squiggly journey? But it's just been such a journey. And so that's been so interesting. So who are the sorts of people that gravitate towards you now to come to do your project and in your membership and to sort of belong to your community, really, and part of your Happy Me project?
Yeah, I think those are predominantly women, but not all. I have men that come into my communities as well. And I think that's largely due to my directness. And I don't believe in toxic positivity. Some days are crap and some days are really crap. And we don't do that in there. I like to keep things as simple as possible, because I think when life is hard, you don't have the capacity to deal with anything else that's complicated. So I tend to find everyday men and women, usually women, as I say, and at this stage in my life, I think you're like attracts like. I tend to find 35 to about 50 is probably my current age range. And it's usually pivotal moments in people's lives. I think age for women tends to be quite a cornerstone for us, because society tells us we should be bothered that we're aging, which you and I spoke about before this and said it's a privilege to age and none of us should be ashamed of aging. But I think for women, it's they hit 30, they hit 40, they hit 50, their children leave home, they go through menopause. These moments are where they're like, oh, I don't know who I am. I'm a little bit lost. I'm at this transition. Am I doing what I want to be doing? Divorces, deaths. These are always pivotal moments when I see people come into my community. During COVID was a huge time when the world shifted and I was already online. I was already doing the stuff that I do, and I found many more people came into my spaces, and actually people who had never done self-development before and who maybe thought it was some other thing, that like it was a bit woo-woo, maybe you had to sit in the woods in the lotus position, it was all a bit embarrassing, and they came into my space and I'm this Geordie, sweary, direct human being who calls out bullshit and admits that sometimes life's crap. And I think a lot of people went, oh, okay, so self-development isn't this fluffy, you know, everything's going to be fine, like kind of attitude. It's not that. It's, you know, I will fully say, I will be the first to say happiness is a choice, which is contentious to a lot of people. But happiness is the word happiness is a verb. You've got to do some stuff. Like that to me is, you know, it's always about finding how can you have this life over here that you want? Because in my mind, there's a way for you to have it. We just have to find the route. And that might mean working on your own mind. That might mean taking yourself out of toxic situations or learning a new skill. But there's a route. And even if it's not the definite, you know, even if it's not the exact thing you first thought it was going to be, you'll find that route. So I tend to find women of that age hit that point and go, oh, okay, am I on the right journey? And they come into my spaces and it is such a safe space. I often attract the odd bods and the weirdos and the square pegs and the, you know, the people who don't know where they fit in the world. And I welcome them all in. And I'm like, look, I'm weird too. And look, here's a load of other weird people. And we're just our own band of weirdos and we can be our truest self and it's okay. And it's safe to be so. And I think I say I'm lucky, but I'm also genuinely attracting these people into my space because of being the most me I am. Like if I can be the most me, that will utterly repel some people. They'll be like, she's so annoying, talks too much, swears too much, not my cup of tea at all. And that's fine. And it's actually what I want to happen, because I'll repel people that would never be people that I would get on with. But on the flip side, you also attract your people as well. So I feel very lucky that I have been brave enough and learned to do that.
But you use this word lucky. I've been very lucky. And I think that when people use that word lucky, often if you just take one step and look behind it, they've actually worked very damn hard to get where they are. That's why they are so lucky, in inverted commas. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, you're all right. And I realized even a couple of years ago, because I'm always doing the work on myself and as well, you know, it's I am the people that I work with. It's not we're not separate. And I noticed that I was doing a very entrepreneurial, probably very female entrepreneurial thing of saying that I was winging it. And I heard myself say it one day and I was like, oh, that's a limiting belief. You're not winging it, babe.
Like, you're working very damn hard. Yeah.
You're working hard. It might feel, as you say at the beginning, a squiggly old line right there, but you're not winging it because you do. You want to be, you know, my motivating factor is freedom. Like, I want to do what I want to do every day. And sometimes I don't know what that's going to look like, but I get, you know, I get a kick out of and I feel purpose in helping other people to see their potential. That's something that really drives me. But freedom is a huge marker for me. And so everything else, I don't know what I'm going to like tomorrow. Maybe it will be something different. Who knows? But I try not to close myself off to anything.
And this is what I love about your story is the fact that it's grown so organically. It's come where you've always just followed your heart. You've done what you've loved. I love the thing that you were saying at the beginning, like, I am an actress. At age 11, you were already projecting out. It was an established fact as far as you were concerned. You believed it. You were breathing it. You were living it. And that's one of the things I think when you're self-employed about already envisioning yourself in this role, or I am whatever it is, dot, dot, dot. But when you look at your story, you know, you can't put it into the confines of I am a hairdresser, I am a photographer, it's just such a lovely story where you're doing something that really lights you up and it's got so many strands to it. Do you have a particular area that you love more than another? Do you really love the podcasting? Is it the sort of self-help stuff that you really enjoy doing, the restival stuff?
Oh, it's a good question. Yeah, I think...
Which bit really lights you up the most?
Firstly, I love novelty. So I like newness. So I do like to have variety. And that's something that can be detrimental at times because, you know, anyone, certainly ADHD people, but also just it's an affliction of an entrepreneur, right? We've always got ideas. So we always want to start new. And in the past, that's kind of spun me out a little bit because I'm doing too many things and nobody knows what I'm doing. So I've kept everything under the Happy Me Project umbrella, but allow myself the wiggle room to do different things under that umbrella without confusing my audience of what I'm doing now. So I'm good with that now. But the things that really excite me, I still adore being in front of a camera. I think, you know, I grew up on TV and that was my safe space. You know, being on set was my safe space. I love TV. I love being in front of a camera. I love the fear factor of life. And wondering what I might say next or what will come out or what will happen, but kind of learning to trust that it will be something good, hopefully, or at least it will be a lesson. So I love that. I love anything where I'm filming on set, things like that. I do love live TV and I do still do some TV stuff as well. But now it's largely, not exclusively, but largely in the space of self-development or being interviewed, that kind of thing. But then I do love live events, and so I've done these big events, Restival. I've done two of them, third one coming up soon, at the end of the year, and I love the connection. And maybe this is also partly due to COVID and not having had that for a time and wanting to meet people in real life and have that. So I do love the energy of that. However, I also can't do that regularly because it burns me out. I can get very overwhelmed by that kind of energy for too long. So I love it, but in small doses. I love writing, so I'm really enjoying, I enjoy writing and loved writing my book. That was really exciting. I do not love the editing process of that, though. That's boring. That's horrid. I've already written a book. I wrote the book. it's done now, move on. And they're like, no.
I'm literally just going through that at the moment for my book. And it is just a bit painful, isn't it? Because you kind of put all your energy, you get all the words on the thing, and then you've got to revisit it. And you think, oh, now what? I don't know whether to change that. I think it seemed all right at the beginning. And then, so there's this dilemma of, and so, yeah, you're right. For ADHD and neurodivergent people, that's a trauma.
We're done with it. But the good thing is, because of the memory side of some of the ADHD stuff, I forgot what I wrote in my book. So I read it back and I'm like, that's brilliant, that is. That's, I'm like, I love that. That's great. Really good. It's so funny, isn't it? But I love writing. I love creativity. And I always say that the link for me in terms of from acting into this world, the big link is I love people's minds. And I love how we all, you know, we're all on this planet. You and I are having this conversation. How did we all get here? Like that, I will never get bored of hearing how our brains work or learning about neuroscience stuff and really nerdy things about our brain and how we interact. And as an actor, you know, my job as an actor was and is sometimes to learn about a character, get to know their likes, their dislikes, their desires, their fears, and then imitate them. And now as a coach, my job is to learn about my clients' desires, fears, wants, how they work, how their triggers are. I just don't pretend to be them unless they have a really strong accent. And then sometimes I will try and have a go at their accent, but I will do it in public in front of them. So I'm not doing it behind their back. But, you know, there is a common thing there. And storytelling is also a common link with the work that I do. You know, in coaching, we use stories to connect. In my writing, I use stories to connect the dots. And, you know, when we're talking about self-development stuff, I'm always about what's the tangible thing I can do every day? Like, how do I bring that into my work? You know, the highbrow, high-level psychology is all well and good, but how do I bring that into, you know, when my kids are having a kickoff or the washing's up the wall and it's hard? Like, what do I do? And we all want that guide. And so I'm always trying to find that through line, that storytelling. And that's why I share my own story as well. You know, I think one of the things for all of us is that we want to feel seen and heard and connected. And by doing podcasts and sharing my own journey, I know from the messages that I get that it allows people to see themselves in some of my words and in the same way I do with other people. And it allows people to go, all right, like I'm not, it's not as bad, or that person who, you know, like I feel like she wouldn't have that problem, but she does, and she struggles with that. And I've lent into that more and more as I've got older. I really try to actively share the good and the bad on my social media. I'm often sharing the chaotic nature of my life with my membership, and I don't do that because I don't do that as a way to, I don't, it's not performative. That literally is the chaos of my life.
I think it's a way of keeping things real, isn't it? Because otherwise it can just all seem like this Instagram show reel, and that's not real life at all, because none of us live in that place. And taking you back a little bit, I know when Ross passed away, how did you sort of tap into that dreadful, devastating pain and move that into something that you use as power and have moved on into creating something so incredible as the Happy Me Project? Because so many people would have just found that as a full stop in life and found that very difficult to have moved on. But you almost harnessed that power, that pain, and moved it into this power. Yeah. So how did you do that, Holly?
I think the big thing for me is, one, I am optimistic. I'm a hopeful person and I want to be happy. I don't allow myself any kind of, maybe this is the wrong way of phrasing it. Firstly, acceptance is the biggest thing for me. Accepting what is. And I'm very, what I was going to say there is, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in an afterlife. Now, people can insert their own. This doesn't have to be that you don't believe in God to be able to get through this. But for me, there is an end. I am very science-based. I'm very black and white in my thinking in that respect. And actually, some people might find that really fear-inducing, that there is an end. I don't. If anything, it gives me a comfort that there's a natural kind of progression of things, and I don't feel any discomfort. And my husband was the same. Like, he was autistic, so he was very, very direct. And we were, you know, very open in our relationship. We we're together nearly 10 years, but again, we were together every day from the minute we met. We just liked each other's company. And so we would just knock about together and drink cups of tea and have a laugh. And so although we didn't have a long time together on paper, we had a very full life together and had such a connection that I felt very lucky. And with Ross, he felt the same. You know, he would say, why not me getting cancer? Why wouldn't it be? And I think that acceptance of it's properly shit that Ross is dead. Like I still, there will be times in my day when I think, how is Ross dead? Like that's so weird. It's so weird when we love someone and then they're a real person and then they're not there. And although I fully see see Ross and my kids, Ross is part of how I live my life because he impacted me so massively that he still impacts my life right now. And so that gives me comfort. I think because we had such an open conversation, so many open conversations, I know what Ross would think about things. And I think that's really comforting in many ways. In the, you know, during the ending of Ross's life, obviously that was chaotic and all of the normal things of emotion were there and nobody's immune to those things. But I really, really practiced this is happening. And in those moments when I was fucking terrified of what would come next and literally the world was watching me, I controlled what I could. I controlled the bits that I could. And for me, I have recognized that in times of difficulty, I need to create and not consume. And for me, that means creating something could be creating like a content or courses or growth or something that I get to focus on. During the hospice time, there was a few things. I did a second life coaching course while I was in the hospice. I was raising money for the hospice because I recognized that it cost like, at the time, it had cost about 10 grand to keep Ross in there, which blew my mind. And I was like, okay, let's get that, you know, paid back. And I, in not consuming meant only allowing in my space what is safe, you know, for me to see in that moment. So it was really being protective of my space. And that's what's helped to get me through.
That's so interesting. Thank you for sharing that. That's that will be really helpful for other people to hear. And just to sort of wrap up, what would you suggest as ways that other people could help to get started? Do you have any hacks or tricks to just help them tap into be happy and wake up and choose happiness each day? Because I'm just like you, I believe it's a choice and we get to decide on that every single day or any given moment. It doesn't have to be at the beginning of a day. We can change any situation and just think, you know what, I'm not going to let that affect me. But what sort of tips and tricks could you offer people?
Tangible stuff. Let's go for it. Okay. So first and foremost is firstly, check the basics. If you're feeling rubbish, check in with the basics first. Have you drank any water? No, you haven't. Go and get a glass of water. Drink your water. Get some decent food in you. I'm not a nutritionist. I'm not going to sit and say good and bad foods or anything like that, but get some decent food in you. Run your body correctly. Get some sleep. Again, I know this for those that are parents is sometimes hard, but do your best or at the very least slow down in moments to kind of give yourself some breathing space. Get outside and move your body. That's the basics. If any of those are missing, everything else is harder. So start with that. The next thing is to look and listen to how you are talking about your current situation. What's the language that you are using? How are you framing it? When I was in the hospice, I never once said this is a living, breathing nightmare. And I could have. People would have forgiven me for saying those things. They would have said, yeah, of course it is. People described it to me as that. But what people would say is, how are you? How are you doing? And I would say, I wasn't lying. It's not toxic positivity, but I wanted it to be what I wanted it to be. And so I would say, I'm okay. I'll be better. You know, this is hard, but I'm okay. And I walk through this. And I would use language like that because I was teaching my own brain that I could do that. So listen to how you're talking about it and see if there's a milder way of describing your current situation. When you're in the difficult stuff, you absolutely have to just protect your brain, protect your space and get ruthless with what comes in that door, what you're watching, who's in your space, even people you love and care about. Some of them just drain the life out of you. And in those moments where you have no capacity to have them there, you need to be really real with yourself and create boundaries for that. Who are you following on social media? Even if it's somebody who you think initially you started following because you thought they were going to inspire you or make you go to the gym, and now you're going on there and you're like, oh my God, that fit person on Instagram that looks amazing and it just makes me want to eat cake. If it's not serving its purpose, don't follow that person. Stop hate following people. That's really important. The news is something, just knock the news on the head for a little bit because it's just never going to give you anything great. In the world of journalism, they say, if it bleeds, it leads. So that is telling you they're going to put the most negative stories on there because people consume it and love it. So really get protective of your space. Check those basics and just audit who you are around. Find activities to do that light you up and begin to train your brain to find joy. That's one of the biggest things that I would say. Look for the joy, because next to something really painful is something good. It's science. For every negative, there is a positive and vice versa. So look for those things. They will pull you through, but also really be kind to yourself, because some days you're just going to want to sit in your pants and eat chicken nuggets and feel sorry for yourself. And they're okay. They're important days. Chicken nugget days are important days as well.
I love that. That's so valuable. So I love the basics that you've given, and then the next level up that you can really start to tap into that. Thanks so much, Holly, for sharing all of that with us today. And if our listeners would like to find out more about you and connect, where is the best place that they can find you?
I am hollymatthews.com/allmystuff. We'll take you to all the places. I hang out on Instagram a lot. I'm on Facebook. I am on TikTok, trying to build up my following to impress my children. So you can find me on there as well. But what I would love to offer your listeners is a free month in my membership, in the Happy Me Project membership. And to get that, just go onto Instagram and send me a message and say this is where you've come from, and I will offer you that free, and you can try it. If it's for you, cool. If it's not, that's okay as well. But I just want to give people the taste of what it is that they get in there, and it's a real safe place to land. We talk all things mindset every day. There is a space and a something for you to do and to work through, and it's a wonderful community in there as well. So I would love to offer that up. And I'm approachable, you know, as we can tell, I love a chat. So come and tell me your story, and I'd love to get to know everybody.
Thank you. That's so kind. And I'm going to put the links to all of that in the show notes, so anybody that wants to connect with you can do that and get into your DMs and have that free month in your membership. That sounds awesome. I think I might do that. Thank you.
Definitely.
And thank you everyone for listening again this week. I hope you have the best week. Earn lots of lovely money with the least amount of stress. And until next time, let's catch up again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then do hit subscribe so we can catch up again soon. And please kindly leave a review if you've got a moment, and share with anyone else that you think this podcast could help on their self-employed journey. If you're ready to make bigger breakthroughs in your business life and want to get way more organized and understand your finances the really simple way, then start your very own 14-day free trial today using the super powerful software tool Pocket PA that I made for my own son and daughter. Go to pocketpa.com/podcast and let's get you on the way to earning more money and stressing much less. Have a great week, whatever you're doing.